This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. It is Thursday, November 19, 2020. Thursday, November 19, 2020. I'm coming to you from WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station. Indeed, we are the flagship station for progressive talk all over the country. Tom Hartman and Stephanie Miller, Joan Esposito, all of these people and more are the colleagues here at this station. And we're so excited to be able to bring the breadth, to bring the best in progressive talk with you, to you every day. We're going to have Nina Turner. That's right. Hello, somebody, Nina Turner, on with us today. And Ro Khanna will be on with us tomorrow. Some people are saying this tremendous congressman out of Silicon Valley might be running for or in the running for Kamala Harris's seat when she becomes vice president. Would that not be fantastic? A game changer. Oh, boy, we've got a lot of people that we're going to talk with today. We're going to be talking with, of course, Erin Connolly is bringing back Alderwoman Rosana Rodriguez Sanchez and Illinois State Senator Delia Ramirez and Hilario Dominguez. We're going to be talking about these children. Our children who are being arrested in school. There's a four-year-old child who, this story is now beginning to gain some traction here, who was dragged by an officer. Chicago police have not made any comments on it, but it seems that it could have been a police officer, certainly an officer. The officer who dragged this child, there is a Chicago police officer by the same name. And we want to know how the CPS investigated it, but the last people to be told about any of this, the child's parents. How does that work? You know, and how is it that we have more than 30,000 children under the age of 10 arrested in the U.S. since 2013, according to the FBI? I mean, how does that work? I mean, what are we doing? Why are we criminalizing children? What are we doing? And special needs children? And we're reopening the schools in Chicago. At least that's the projection, February 1st, while New York City is closing their schools until further notice. And we are in a hot spot. Whoa. We've got a lot to talk about today, and we want to talk about it with you. We need you to call us or text us at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. GWCNG Lawyers gives you the opportunity to text us. We need to talk about that. Are you ready for Thanksgiving? Of course, Shapiro will be talking with us. Shapiro Wells will be talking with us about these fabulous meals. This is your last day to order. She might be taking some orders tomorrow, you guys, but you got to hurry up and get that in today. Hurry up and get your orders in today. Got mine in a couple of days ago. And of course, Dr. Deborah Furholden talking to us about this rapid rate of spread of infection. There are 3 million people in the United States estimated to be contagious with coronavirus. Let's get to some of these headlines as we go to Chicago. Chicago, 64 degrees will be the high today, and it'll be cloudy. Minneapolis, St. Paul, AM 950 radio, sending you much love. 51 degrees, partly cloudy. The Dow closed down 344 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed down 97 points. S&P 500 closed down 41 points. Wow. What do you make of the news that Chicago Public Schools will bring back elementary students February 1st? What do you make of the fact that the largest public school system in the United States, New York City, they're closing until further notice because of a sharp rise in coronavirus, which is what we're seeing here? Is it too early to project? You let me know. You let me know what you're thinking. And just a little quick something. There's a new study that came out of Cardiff University overseas in the UK that says that preliminarily, at least, mouthwashes containing at least 0.007% of CPC show promising signs of combating the virus. Now, I've been told by several physicians that you should gargle with Listerine or Dr. Tischner's. Dr. Tischner's, you have to water that way down, everybody. So that when you get up in the morning and when you come back home, they say immediately do that because it can help to kill the virus. Hey, it's something to think about. And now there's a study that proves that out. The people in Illinois who are contracting the coronavirus, according to our Illinois Department of Health, Public Health Director Dr. Ngozi Ezike, said that in analyzing the data every day and over time, the largest number of coronavirus cases, people who get COVID-19, are in the age group 20 to 29. Then they spread it to everybody else. and it kills those in their 80s first, their 70s just after that. Highest mortalities, everybody. And it turns out it's because these young people, they're getting out and they are working. They are dining out. They are living their lives. And it's compromising us all, everybody. Wow, more than 3 million people in the United States are estimated to be contagious with the virus. This comes on the heels of knowing that 250,000 people, we just passed that tragic mark yesterday, 250,000 people have died of the coronavirus. And yesterday indeed was the highest death day in this whole pandemic in the United States. Wow. What about this, everybody? There's a leaked White House report that warns that the current COVID-19 mitigation efforts are woefully inadequate. It was leaked widely to the media, and it added that these mitigation efforts must be increased. They said that, wow, this is from an internal White House task force that warned of an aggressive, unrelenting, broad community spread across the country without evidence of improvement, but evidence of further deterioration. It's something for us to think about, everybody. This is very, very real as we go into the holidays. There are places around the country that are saying that you should limit the people around your table for Thanksgiving to 6 people, but you need to have been in quarantine for 14 days prior to that. You should have had a COVID-19. You should have had a coronavirus test. Have you done any of those things? And now the question is, should Vice President Biden, soon-to-be President-elect Biden, soon-to-be President Biden, should all go well, as we think that it will, should he enact Medicare for all? Now, mind you, he said he would veto it, but that was in March. Things were not as bad in March as they are today. He said he would veto it then. Do you think that he should change his mind? Now, you know, you can march and push and make him do it, because think about it. You can get tested for free. But it would cost you a whole lot of money, what could drive you into bankruptcy, is getting hospitalized with COVID-19. Think about that, everybody. Think about that. Do you want Medicare for all? Would you let me know? And the billionaire bonanza continues with this pandemic as workers are pounded by the pandemic and the recession and the refusal of the GOP to give relief to workers. Guess what? The wealth of the 647 richest Americans has increased by nearly $1 trillion. Reverend Dr. Gregory Seal Livingston, give us some good news today.
Grand Rising to you, Diva. It's always a pleasure to be on your incredibly brilliant, informative, and current show. You know, we were talking in the pre-talk about the suspensions, the police involvement in the schools, or the over-policing in the schools, the four-year-old being dragged down the hall and all these things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you know, I passed into some of the most challenging areas in the city when I was in Chicago. And, you know, and so in those challenging areas, you're going to have a higher involvement of law enforcement of every type. But one of the things in this season of Black Lives Matter that I've learned is that people will complain about, well, why are you just saying Black Lives Matter, all lives matter and all that, and all lives do matter. But the point here is that when Black Lives Matter, that has historical roots, that when one Black life matters in this country, guess what? Then all other lives matter by default. And we're saying this in terms of the percentage, if you will, the overrepresentation of young Black children being over-policed, if we can use that language, in these schools. And it happens to other groups as well. But I'm bold enough to say that America and America's Black ghettos have always been the control group for whatever we do in this country, whether it be starting new businesses or new law enforcement techniques and tactics, that when this kind of practice ends with Black children, it will end also for every other group. Because I know of no other community in this country that is always infiltrated by folk that want to start new businesses or do whatever. And we own less of our community than any other group that has their own, if you will, peculiar or particular or eponymous community. And so in terms of what we're talking about today and even the inspiration of it, I really have to say this, you know, is that we have to become powerful, become strong. And to quote your brother, Jonathan, we're not trying to fix blame. We're trying to fix the problem. But one of the ways of fixing this problem is every individual, and I say this as a Christian minister, you must see yourself in the image and likeness of Almighty God. Stop seeing yourself in the image of a racist, of a sexist, of a whatever, whatever kind of is, but see yourself in the image. I'm giving you something here. See yourself in the image of greatness, of being a creator, of being a genius, of being brilliant. You're beautiful. You're handsome. You're incredible. Why? Because God does not make junk. I don't care what you've been through. You've been damaged. We've all been damaged. Truth is, Santita, if you are a black American in America, you are dysfunctional by default. But, hey, look at this. We've built cities out of dirt. We've built bridges over rivers. We've sent people to the moon. We fly over the earth. Nothing is impossible. You are not impossible. You are not an irreparable, unrepairable, if you will, entity. You can be changed, you can be altered, you can be transformed, but you got to get these words, this narrative that I'm putting in you to counter that negative thing that is within you. And you know what's interesting, Dr. Santita, is that oftentimes some of us blacks who make it out, if I can use that language, sometimes we become offended when the majority population will treat us in a certain way to say that we're less than what we have aspired to be and achieve. But the reason that is that we fail to realize that we are not the rule, that we are the exception. And when we allow those who have not made it out to be continually treated in a disparaging and a painful manner, guess what? Because we're not the rule, we're not considered the exception either. If one is not free, all are not free. But the freedom will start within you and work itself out. There's an old word, Santita, that's a rare word. I call it the extrinsication of freedom. It is the outworking of freedom. There's a great German theologian named Ernest Cassemann. He wrote a book entitled Jesus Means Freedom. And for all you people that are hung up, I ain't talking about your church or your denomination. I ain't talking about that. The Jesus I'm talking about is that black revolutionary rabbi that was executed by the Roman government, and then after about 3 or 4 days, they couldn't find his body, and the movement has been going on ever since. You know what? I ain't crazy, because I'm talking this to the great Santita, the diva, Jack. Oh, love you.
Bless brother. Your heart. You know, and the beauty of Jesus is that, you know, not only was he of African extraction, but he belonged to some of everybody. That's the beauty when you examine his lineage. And we should all, in America, we have the one drop rule, right? Reverend Dr. Livingston, right. As I bring on Dr. Verholten. But he belongs to everybody. He belongs to everybody. He is part of everybody. Everybody. He doesn't just belong to one group. He belongs to everybody. And his teachings should be, at least, you need to give him a listen. Whatever your faith, whatever your religious commitment, whatever your spiritual commitment is, give him a listen, but give other people a listen. Because some of the finest Christians I know, Reverend Dr. Livingston, are Muslim, they're Jew, they're Buddhist, they're animist, they're all kind, they have all kinds of seekings that they have. And so I want to see some people. If you say you're a believer, then I need you to show me. How about that?
And Reverend Dr. Livingston. These pre-racial categories, yes.
Please, I mean, because there's much more than it's much more. There's much more to the world than this. We've racialized our problems here. And so instead of really dealing with, we've stopped at America in 2019, in 2020, Dr. Deborah Verholten, as I bring you forth, we're saying we're dealing with a racial reckoning. That's because we don't want to deal with the deep, broader issue of class reckoning. This society was structured to be on. It was structured in an unfair way. It doesn't mean it needs to stay there. But you know what? It was structured to favor the oligarchs, to favor men, white men of property. It didn't even take into consideration their wives, their daughters. Come on, everybody. Let's grow up. Let's grow up. Loving you, Reverend Dr. Livingston, Dr. Deborah Verholten. Boy, we got a lot to talk about. We passed that 250,000 person mark. 250,000 mothers, husbands, partners, daughters, sons, uncles, aunts, best friends, frenemies, all of that made their transition due to COVID-19. Wow, wow, wow. And we're not even looking at the millions who are living with it. And I just came across this information yesterday, Dr. Deborah Verholten. 3 million people in the United States, at least, are contagious. Dr. Deborah Verholten, it's just, there's so much going on. I mean, and then we're finding, you know, the head of our Illinois Department of Health, Public Health, brilliant, brilliant young woman. She said, look, the primary spreaders are those in the 20 to 29 age group. I mean, they're out, you know, they're working, but they're going out to dinner. I mean, they're living their lives. And then the first people to die are those in their 80s. Next group after that, those in their 70s. I don't even know what to say. I don't know what to say. You help me, because we are now about to walk into Thanksgiving, and some states are mandating that no more than 6 people be at your dining room table. And then you've got some other elected officials who are saying, well, what are you going to do? Walk into someone's house and arrest them? And certainly I am sensitive to people's liberties and rights. I am absolutely sensitive to that. I've always worried about all of the restrictions and the rollbacks on our rights that happened after 9/11 and 2001, rights that were never restored. And we need to pay attention to that. At the same time, we've got a pandemic, a virus that is airborne, that can linger in the air for hours. Help me, Dr. Deborah Verholten. What are we supposed to... Oh, what would you recommend that we do?
Well, you put a lot out there. That was a
I did.
That well, was a you lot know, of different things. Yeah, I mean, it's because there's a lot of different things going on. You know, so the first thing is hitting this $250,000 mark. You know, it's like I did a half marathon years ago, and man, when you get to that, you know, maybe mile 5, mile 8 marker, you start to feel really good. And then you get to that marker that says, final stretch, 1 mile. And I'll never forget, when I hit that, I took off running. Mind you, my body was tired, right? So that
yes.
Last mile, I was running faster than I had been running the couple miles before that. Ooh, it was rough. And then when I saw the finish line, it was like I just got a wind and I just kept going. And the picture of me running across the finish line. Boy, if I could have run the whole race like that, I'm laughing. I got a nice stride. My girlfriend is next to me. It was like victory. It's not one of those times. It's not one of those milestones where you hit it and we celebrate. I think many of us are still in shock and disbelief that we're even still in this. No one, I absolutely did not predict. Mind you, I couldn't have possibly imagined the massive mismanagement at the federal and at many states, at the federal level and in many states that would happen, that would still have us be here. But there is no way that you could have told me in March that we'd be having this conversation in November. And so,
I mean, that it seems like everything's. I mean, we're projecting, because I need you to stay with us, because we're talking about reopening the schools here in Chicago in February. But at the same time, New York City, the largest public school system, has said we've got to close like immediately.
And I've said this before with these other things. These plans are aspirational, you know, and if people don't have some kind of plan and don't tell people something. But anybody that's planning to open in February is sort of a joke. We don't even know where we're going to be in February. Mm. We might be off the rails by February. So how are schools going to open then? So I got it. Like, that's people's aspirational plan. But nobody can say with any degree of certainty what any of us are going to be doing in February. I don't even know if you've noticed this, but the conversation and the talk about the vaccine tends to waffle around a lot, too.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, what is that?
Rolling out vaccines in December. They've been sending notices out to health departments, letting them know the vaccine is coming in December. First in line are the frontline healthcare workers. But I'm like, well, where's this vaccine? We don't even have use authorization for the vaccine yet. And I realize that they're giving people a heads up that it's coming, or it's highly likely that it's coming, so people can prepare and plan for distribution. So my thing is, shouldn't people be given guidance on what that looks like? And, you know, with that guidance and their own, you know, local teams, the capacity to mount up and get the vaccine, not just distributed, but administered. You know, so there's just so many variables happening at the same time. But the key here is all of it is malleable. Like, none of this was predictable because I couldn't have predicted the COVID response that we were going to have. That's where I made my mistake. I underestimated just how poor the response would be. I thought this is clearly one of those cases where why wouldn't you want the scientists at the forefront, right? It's like you got a major medical problem. You don't want somebody that doesn't have a medical degree diagnosing you. And then you don't want a generalist. You want a specialist. You want somebody, if it's a problem with your skin, you want a dermatologist. Problem with your reproductive system, you want a, you know, OBGYN if you're a woman. You know, like, you want a specialist, right? You want the right person for the right job. And I just could have never predicted that these decisions would be made almost in a vacuum, solely and exclusively by politicians who were not only not taking, you know, not letting scientists lead, but they were ignoring the scientists and doing things counter to what the scientists were saying. And they knew it, and they were doing it anyway. So,
well, you know, I mean, but also, you know, I know, I just said the plan was always herd immunity. It's just, it's horrifying. You know, cause folks.
I'm telling you, that was not the plan.
You know what? I just. The only reason I pushed back is because the president kept saying that, and they have behaved that way, Dr. Verhoeven. It's not a good plan. It's not a plan.
I'm saying that to cloak a completely incompetent response. You know, they learned a big
word. I can accept that.
Yeah, they've learned a big word. If they understood what that mean and what that meant and really what the cost would be, that's not a plan. The only way that's a plan, they're trying to get us there through vaccination. Herd immunity for a disease that has a fatality rate as high as this, and when I say as high as this, something on the order of 2-3% is too high. You know what I'm saying?
I hear you.
We didn't
stay right there. Hold on.
For chicken pox, because so many kids miss school.
I hear you.
Get fever.
But you know,
sick.
I know. Stay right there. No, you're right. You're absolutely right. But you don't have people who are affirming life, and that for me is problematic. Stay right there. We got a lot to talk about on the Santita Jackson Show, right here with Dr. Deborah Verhoeven. Nina Turner will be with us today, and all of you back in just a minute.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. You know Nina Turner is going to be with us at the top of the hour. And I want you to like and share, everybody, because we've got a tremendous lineup with us today as we talk about our children and the schools. You know, Dr. Deborah Verhoeven and I already got it started as we've been talking about COVID-19 and the coronavirus, which is shaping and reshaping how we're living. The New York City public schools, they say they're closing down until further notice. Chicago Public Schools said we are looking at a preliminary reopening at February 1st. But all over the country, school systems are opening and closing, opening and closing. It's just, it's very uneven as the United States, the entire country, at least the lower 48, the 48 contiguous states, are being described as the world's hotspot for coronavirus. Oh, my goodness. How does that work? How does that work? Dr. Deborah Verhoeven, Associate Dean of Public Health at Michigan State University, has been talking to us about this. And she said, I could not have fathomed 6 months ago that we'd be here. Couldn't have fathomed it. And so we bring on Erin Connolly, who has a child in the public school system, attorney Erin Connolly, really a tremendous advocate, political organizer, wonderful, wonderful advocate for people, for human rights. And I'm so grateful for that, and civil rights. And we are so excited to have your fellow alum, Dr. Deborah Verhoeven from Johns Hopkins University, someone who teaches in our public schools. We love this. That's right. We are so excited to welcome him to the, I'm so excited. I mean, this is Hilario Dominguez is with us. I mean, you know, just when you take these stellar credentials and you bring them back to our children, because then, Mr. Dominguez, our children see what they can be. And, you know, and I think that's a wonderful thing. Before we bring in Dr. Deborah Verholden, I want you to tell me, what are you thinking as you're watching the New York City public schools? They're saying we're closing down until further notice because the coronavirus is spreading like wildfire here once again. We're in a hot spot in Chicago, throughout the Midwest, throughout the country, and we're projecting the reopening of our schools. I mean, and, you know, I mean, I haven't even mentioned this 4-year-old child who was dragged through the school by the police off. The police won't comment, but a police officer who dragged the officer who dragged the child, there's also a police officer by the same name. And the CPS investigated, but no one told the mom. This is what we did to your child who has special needs. It's like, even if we reopen the schools, what are we sending our children back to? But in a time of pandemic, how does it make you feel as a teacher? I mean, do you think that the system is ready to reopen? Is that someone sighing or crying or frustrated?
That's me sighing, you know. I'm frustrated. Because at this point, it goes beyond the difficulty teachers are having with instruction. At this point, it goes beyond the difficulty parents are having finding a babysitter or even time to help their kids. It goes beyond principals trying to figure out how they'll structure safety in their building. At this point, honestly, it's about survival. You know, when the district poses a date like that, what they're really saying is, we don't care about your lives. We don't care about teachers, about principals, parents, and most importantly, our children. Right? We have a system that is making decisions in a back room without the voices of parents or teachers or students themselves. How do you do that? You know, even the NBA, even our sports leagues include their players in making these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
But teachers and parents and principals are all finding out on the same day that, oh, hey, we have a skeleton. And we want you all to go back in February. I think the doctor was saying this earlier. That's a joke. You know, for you to be able to project a return to schools like that, where you're putting our kids, our lives on the line, that's a joke, right? And then they'll get up there and they'll say, this is based on science. The CDC, our government, is saying on their website that it is no longer safe. That teachers and students, this is the exact wording on their website, teachers and students are in close contact for much of the day, and schools can become a place where respiratory diseases like COVID-19 can quickly spread. That's on their website. So, you know, we just got rid of a president saying all these crazy things against science, but don't get it twisted. We got a mayor that's saying similar things. You know, she may not be a Republican or look Republican, but she certainly acts like Mr. Trump himself. And that's scary. That's scary.
What do you need her to do? Because I know she's not a Republican. And I think, I know you do. And I'm trying to find out, because what all of these different forces, many of us, I have to understand the business of education. It's unfortunate, but you know, you have vendors, you have all of these people. That's it. And let me bring in Dr. Deborah Verholden here, because as she has been pushing back against the reopenings of schools, where she is, and she's an administrator. Dr. Deborah Verholden, you found out that business has a big buy-in in reopening all of these schools at every level, from the elementary to the collegiate.
Yeah, a lot of money has been made during this pandemic. But what I'll tell you is, and it's cool to hear from another alum, so I'll just throw it out there. I was class of 96 from the Krieger School, class of 99 from the Bloomberg School. Hopkins has an initiative called the Bloomberg American Health Initiative, and it is a program where they do free master's degrees and DRPHs. For people who are engaged in community. And the thing that I'll say is, when I went to undergraduate and when I went to graduate school, and you know, Santita, I went sort of straight through. Now, I was kind of born bold. I'm what they call a high E. I'm an extreme extrovert. If you've ever done a Myers-Briggs, the first letter is introvert or extrovert. And then it's got little whiskers. So, you know, you, there's a line in the middle, and you fall on one side of the line. I'm all the way out at the tail end of the E. I'm an extreme extrovert. So I'm very outspoken, very bold, and I'm also very well trained. I can tell you, we're in Michigan. In my county, in Genesee County, there are multiple subdivisions. There's only two that have not reopened, that have stayed fully online, and that is the Flint Community Schools and Beecher Community Schools. And Beecher is our immediate neighbor to the north. And that is because they have a Deborah Verholden here, and they have a school superintendent who listens to the science. And Flint is very different from most of the rest of the county. The rest of the county is substantially whiter. It's substantially wealthier. And I was unapologetic in making both public statements and having multiple private conversations with our mayor, with our local school superintendent, that if you reopen schools, and do not get me wrong, I completely understand what best serves our children is in-person instruction, right? Like, I understand that. And under normal conditions, I am an advocate for public schools. I'm a product of public schools. However, we are in a pandemic, and the impact of coronavirus on already vulnerable and marginalized communities is so much more profound than in communities that are better economically resourced, that have more political power, et cetera. And so we are one of only two local school districts within our county. The other 12, 13 all reopened. Most of them had massive outbreaks. We had outbreaks at the high schools. We had outbreaks in the middle schools. We had outbreaks in the elementary schools. And they subsequently had to close. But the collateral damage of the decision to reopen hit them hard. We are dealing with the impact of not having our kids in school. Our kids eat at school. Our kids are loved and nurtured at school. Our kids have observers paying attention to them, figuring out, okay, this little boy had the same little stain on his knee, on his pants, Monday and Tuesday. Here we are Wednesday. He got the same pants with the same little stain on his knee. So there's all these things, right? All of the occupational support services, all of the behavioral health support services, all of the special education services. It's very difficult to deliver those in a remote setting. So I understand it's not the ideal situation, but what we need is for our children, our teachers, our school staff, I'm talking everybody, the janitors, the resource people, the paraprofessionals, those people got to be safe. Because when we actually get a solid national, state, and local strategy in place, we don't want to have a less healthy community returning back to school. And so the reason that Flint Community Schools are not open is because they have a Deborah Verholden on the ground floor fighting, screaming from the rooftop, we're not ready. But we are not taught. I am trained as a highly skilled epidemiologist. I know how to make sense of the data. I know how to analyze that data. I have a high E personality, and I'm bold and fearless about advocating and being a researcher activist. What we have a dearth of all across the country are people like me at the levels that really matter, and there's a gap in people having what they need. The people like me who aren't bold, who aren't fearless, who haven't really ever had to practice the type of courageousness and activism that's needed so that it's not just about the science. We're contending with a lot of enthusiasm from an administration that is made not masking up a political statement, right? Yeah, our primary line of defense is to protect you from others and others from you, and that has been politicized, and there's a lot of enthusiasm for that movement. So what we really need are people like the folks on this call to rally
and put the pressure on the people making the decisions to let them know we're not ready. This declaration that these schools are going to be open in February is false hope. It's selling a pipe dream to people. And if they wanted to make those statements, then they need to also back it up with a plan.
Hold on.
We're saying that because we've got the following strategies in place. We're in partnership with the local health department and the this and the that. Our current case rate or positivity rate is this. These plans, we predict that we'll be able to get it below here. If all of this happens, then we will be in better position to reopen in February. Because then all of a sudden, now there's real meat on the bone. And people need to understand, if you having problems managing child care with your children, well, guess what? Don't go to the restaurant. Don't go to the bar. When you have to go out and get groceries, make sure that you're masked up. Because these supposedly well-laid plans, if they're not executed and if people don't comply, then whatever is needed for schools to actually reopen safely just simply won't be there. So they're selling people a pipe dream right now.
Well, hold on, Mr. Dominguez. This is what, and I've got Dr. Reeves on from New York City, who's dealing with this too. Dr. Reeves, I want you to respond to what you just heard, and then Mr. Dominguez, I want you to jump in. I'm talking to you as if I'm in your classrooms, Mr. Dominguez and Dr. Reeves. Dr. Reeves, very quickly, you all are about to reopen. You've just heard Dr. Deborah Furholden, and Aaron, you're listening. You got your parent. Attorney Connolly, who's got a child in the system. I mean, Dr. Reeves, you all are closing, and we're talking, but you were fighting to not reopen in the first place. You said, we're not ready.
Yes.
What do you make of these are two of the biggest systems in the country. We're the third largest. You're the largest. Not reopen. What is this? What's going on?
So I agree with everything that Dr. Furholden said. There's a lot of things that people don't know about what happened in New York. Not every school opened in September. As a matter of fact, they pushed back the date so many times because we did not have the proper PPE equipment in the schools. The special needs district was completely shut down for over a month. And then when teachers did go in, they were teaching kids outside on the sidewalk, because they did not want to go into the school buildings. We had over 100 buildings that were just not ready to accept the kids. And then when the schools did open on October 1st, what happened is we saw where parents started saying, okay, we don't want our kids in the school. We want them to be home on remote learning. So it was a back and forth, the mayor claiming that he did not know exactly what was going on because the chancellor didn't tell him. The chancellor, trying to figure out how he can go against that type of press. And then most of the schools in certain areas started closing down because of the community. So we had a surge that went from what New York was boasting as under 3% to in the space of 2 weeks, 7% because of certain communities that they were in, certain religious communities. So they had to shut schools down. We had principals fighting back, open schools. Several of those principals came down with the coronavirus themselves, left the schools open but did not return to the school buildings. And then with the continuous surge, because we have the religious community still fighting to ensure that their schools are kept open, what ended up happening was we started filling out petitions online and sending them to the governor, calling on experts that they were relying on and other experts, and giving them data from Johns Hopkins and saying, look, this is what's going on. We had kids who were supposed to be on remote, and these kids were getting the coronavirus because some of them have to work or whatever it is. And we started showing those data to the governor. And finally, the governor made the decision to shut down the New York City public schools. So we've had.
So do you think should they? Well, then let me ask you this just very quickly, because I've got to talk about voting and for a quick, just very, very quickly. Should the schools reopen or should they not reopen?
They absolutely should not reopen
because
they don't have a plan.
They don't have a plan.
Absolutely.
Mr. Dominguez, because you're in New York and you've literally been going through the schools. Are the schools physically ready in Chicago to be reopened? I mean, because you cleaning and sanitizing are two different propositions, for example.
Right.
You see in other countries that they're erecting plastic barriers in between each individual desk. I don't see anything like that happening here.
No, our schools physically are not ready to open. Remote learning as it stands is so frustrating. It's something that teachers, I can tell you, not one teacher will say, like, this is what I signed up for. But I think it's also really important to say that doing remote learning this way isn't working. And what we haven't tried is to do it another way, right? And we know that just because we try something one way, it doesn't mean we should just put up our hands and quit and say, oh, this isn't working, in frustration. And mind you, I'm a special education teacher in the South Side, right? So I know we're going to get into the story with a student with special needs, but my students, right, have many different needs that cannot be addressed right now through remote learning this way. But we need to start thinking about this differently. And that's
Hold on, Mr. Dominguez.
Well, in terms of instruction.
Well, how do you address the needs? I mean, how do you teach or how do you manage a child remotely who has special needs?
I think that's a great question. Because it gets into the what if, right? Because now we can start imagining, Santita. Now we can start saying, like, man, how instead of managing, how do we build a school year? One of my colleagues, Ashley McCall on the South Side, she wrote a piece and she said it beautifully. How do we design a school year for recovery? You know, what if we designed a school year for recovery? What if we really listen to students and what they need? In my classroom, I have students, I can't specifically say each student, but I have students that have autism, students that have ADHD, students that have dyslexia, and we all get in every single day today at 9 o'clock. We'll be getting online, and we'll be talking about Eve Ewing's Iron Heart, right? And we're going to be dissecting a comic book about a young black girl from the South Side who becomes a superhero. And the kids are excited about doing that because now instruction isn't like, okay, how do we manage you, right? But now it's how do we explore together given this weird remote learning medium that we have? How do we make this engaging in the hour that we have or 30 minutes that we have so that you want to learn, so that you want to participate? You know, so that you feel safe and you feel listened to in this 30 minutes, right? Because we all know that outside of remote learning, outside of our computers, 2020 has been a mess and this is hard. So how do we just create this environment right here on the computer screen where we're thinking about schools differently? We're not thinking about grades. We're not thinking about, college preparation. We're worried about you as a person, as a student. You know, and I think that's to me, if we start thinking about remote learning that way and we start asking those big questions, I think we can find a way that'll work for the meantime and is better than what we're doing now until we get to a place where schools are safe to reopen, because right now they're not. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, and that's why we need a Dr. Deborah Verholden on the ground, someone with these stellar credentials. And quite frankly, you, Mr. Dominguez, I mean, the fact that. Because unfortunately, this is the way the society is, right? When they hear about where you went to school, people are going to give you another kind of listen. Okay, and I'm so glad that we have two people on this call, and three and four, who are willing to use all that you have in this way. And the question is, how do we get there? Because we are now looking at, we crossed that awful line yesterday. 250,000 plus Americans have died of COVID-19. I mean, more and more countries are shutting their borders to us. You can't even travel outside of the United States increasingly because Canada said, do not come here. You all have not got this thing under control. We're trying to mitigate this virus. And now we're talking about sending children who, as soon as you send a child to school, they come back with all kind of colds and whatnot. We haven't talked through online learning. We haven't talked through so much. I need you to stay right here today. Stay right here. Because, I mean, you know, Mr. Dominguez and Dr. Reeves and of course, Dr. Deborah Verholden, Attorney Aaron Connell, you know I'm going to hear from you. This is a conversation that won't just happen today. We're going to have to continue to stretch this out because this is something that we're dealing with every single day. As you just said, your teachers observe you. They grade you. They tell your parents, this is where your child excels. This is where your child struggles. And if we didn't appreciate teachers before now, we sure do appreciate them now, or at least you ought to. Because they're not just your children's babysitters. These people help. They make everything that your child will do in the future possible. Getting along with people, learning to read, the basics. The basics. I'm a product of Miss Irene B. Smith, who taught me to read, and I thank God for that woman every day. Every day. Every single day. Stay right there, everybody. But I've got to bring up, you know, because we are still in the midst of the election season, everybody. We've got the Georgia Senate race. And we're looking at who could replace. Ro Khanna might even replace, we're hoping, Kamala Harris in the U.S. Senate. Oh, would that be fabulous? But we've got this Georgia Senate race because we've got to get control of the Senate or at least have some balance here. Attorney Darrell Jones, Transformative Justice Coalition. We're still in the midst, shall I say, of the election season. It's not over yet. Attorney Darrell Jones.
Good morning, Santita. Always a pleasure.
Good morning.
You in the morning. And I tell you, you're absolutely right. You know, if you thought that you went through the pressure cooker of the election as we went through the general election on November the 3rd, you ain't seen nothing yet. It's the U.S. Senate race in Georgia, and all gloves are off. The battle is on. There is an on-the-ground fight for the control of the United States Senate. More importantly, and what I like to lay out, is that if there's an on-the-ground fight for the existence of the black and brown vote, I've said it before, I'll say it again, we see oppressive and voter suppression occur across this country during the election time. It is now intensified in the state of Georgia. Take, for example, what happened in Milwaukee County, where Madison is located, in Wisconsin, where we know challenges are going to only those two areas in Wisconsin. Why? Because that's where the black and brown people are. So understanding that mentality, understanding what's under siege, we now come into Georgia where everything is on the line for the U.S. Senate, meaning control of the U.S. Senate. So we look for everything to be pulled out to try to suppress that black and brown vote. Here's what folks need to know that are in Georgia. If you know people in Georgia, call them and inform them of this. Step one, we've got to understand that this election is going to be January the 5th, but don't wait until January to do anything. Absentee ballots for this race in Georgia have gone out yesterday. So people will be receiving them either today or tomorrow so they can begin the process of voting. But if you have not requested an absentee ballot for this runoff race, you won't get it. So you've got to go to My Voter Page Georgia. Just Google My Voter Page Georgia. They'll be able to give you the instructions for confirming that you're registered to vote. If you're not registered to vote, for you to go through the process to get registered, to get the application in. The deadline to register in Georgia is December the 7th. So you've got to get on top of it and get registered. Once you got that, you need to fill out and submit the absentee ballot. There's a special absentee ballot. You've got to request that absentee ballot. Once you do that, you can do it online. You can do it by fax. You can do it in person. Go to your Board of Elections. But once you
have the absentee ballot. My Voter Page Georgia is the website they need to go to. I'm up against the clock.
Okay, My Voter Page Georgia will give you all answers to all things for the Georgia election. Remember, the deadline to register is December the 7th. Get your stuff active, get in there, and get voting.
Amen, everybody. Back with Nina Turner on the Santita Jackson Show, talking about our kids in these schools. Amen. Back in a minute.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Hey, welcome to the Santita Jackson Show, Thursday, November 19th, 2020, 1 week away from Thanksgiving. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. We're going to bring up Chaparral Wells celebrations by us so that you can get your fabulous meal from her. That's right. That's right. But right now, I'm coming to you from WCPT 820, the nation's premier, the largest progressive talk radio station in the country, AM 950 Radio, the voice of progressive Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, sending you much love. It's going to be warm here in Chicago today. 64 degrees, cloudy, although it's not cloudy yet. It's a beautiful, beautiful day. It'll be a beautiful day even with the clouds. Remember, the clouds just give the sun some cover. It's all good. Minneapolis, St. Paul, high of 51 degrees, partly cloudy. The Dow closed down 344 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed down 97 points. The S&P 500 down 41 points. We're talking with Nina Turner. That's right, the great Nina Turner. Hello, Somebody podcast, the fastest growing podcast in the country. We're so excited. We're going to have her wing person, her wingman, if you will, from the Bernie Sanders campaign. They were both national co-chairs. Ro Khanna, who's going to be with us tomorrow. Nina, we're thinking that he might maybe be in, maybe we should push for him to be in Kamala Harris' seat. I'm pushing for that. I'd love that. But today we're talking about the Chicago public schools, everybody, and the New York City public schools. The public schools, should they reopen or should they not? Now the United States is a coronavirus hotspot. The whole lower 48. The whole lower 48. So how can we reopen schools? New York City, the largest public school system in the country, they said yesterday, we've got to close down until further notice because we've got to get this coronavirus under control. And yet, the third largest system in the country, Chicago's, said yesterday, well, we're projecting to open by February. Really? How is that going to work? We've been talking with this tremendous panel about how we're going to take care of our children. You know, we had Operation Push had a movie out years ago called Save the Children. It was out in 1972. It's just that simple. How will we save the children? How will we save the children? Dr. Deborah Furholden, Michigan State University, Associate Dean of Public Health. It's Attorney Aaron Connolly, brilliant political organizer, really helped to pull all this together today. Elario Dominguez, who is a teacher in the CPS. He's also active in the Chicago Teachers Union. We're very, very excited to have you. I don't know if Dr. Reeves is still with us because she's got to go teach today.
I am.
But thank you, Dr. Reeves, Marnie Reeves up in New York. And we've got Shapiro with us, though, before we go through. Well, you know, let me go through a couple of these headlines, Shapiro, because that's very important. You know, I got to do some of that. Sadly, 250,000 Americans now have died because of the coronavirus. Wow. 3 million more in the United States are estimated to be contagious with the coronavirus. What are we doing about it, everybody? It's spreading, it's spreading, it's spreading. And in Illinois, the Illinois Department of Public Health Director, Dr. Ngozi Ezike, said this. We look at the numbers daily, weekly, monthly, wave one to wave two. Right now, we see that the largest number of cases, if you divide them up by groups, the largest number of cases are in the 20 to 29-year-olds. But when you see the individuals that are dying, it's the highest in the 80s and above, and the next highest, 70 and above, next highest, 60 and above, right in order down the line. So we know that through the primary group that's getting infected, that though it's the 20 to 29-year-olds, it does spread from there and gets to our more vulnerable citizens in the state, everybody. Think about that as we are going into this holiday season. We're one week away from Thanksgiving. Think about having many more Thanksgivings before you have this group Thanksgiving next Thursday. Does mouthwash kill coronavirus? There is a study from Cardiff University in the United Kingdom that says, you know, preliminarily, yes. Yes, yes, yes. You know, we've been hearing about that, but there is this preliminary study that says, you know, that these very strong mouthwashes can possibly kill the virus, that they do kill the virus, but they need to study more. So everyone, and one of the things that one of my dear friends, Dr. Damon Arnold, the former director of the Illinois Department of Public Health, who preceded Dr. Ezike, he told me months ago, when you wake up in the morning, gargle with Listerine. And when you get back home, as soon as you get home and you wash your hands, then gargle with Listerine or Dr. Tischner's, something really strong. But, you know, Dr. Tischner's, everybody, you got to water it down. Now the question for Vice President Biden, soon to be President-elect Biden, soon to be President of the United States. Should he sign an executive order guaranteeing Medicare for all for everybody? Now, back in March when he was running for president, he said he would veto it. Said the price tag is too high. But now we're in a different place. Do you think he should do that? Let me know. Call me. Text me, 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. And thank you, GWC Injury Lawyers, for the opportunity to text. Chaprol Wells, I've gotten my order in for Thanksgiving, and Nina got an order in for her cakes, and Dr. Reeves got an order in, and a whole lot of us have. What do you have by celebrations by us? What can we do? Where is Chaprol? Where is she? Paul, where is Chaprol?
I'm sorry. I'm on the mute. I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Thank you very much, and thank you, Paul, for having her up. But she was on mute because she's taking care of these children who she wishes she could put in school today. But go on, Chaprol. How can we get these wonderful meals from you?
Yes, Santita. Thank you so much, and thank you to your audience. I mean, I've been talking to all of your audience, and they have been ordering big and small orders. So we are very appreciative for the great response to this catering. And today we are taking our last set of orders. I love y'all, but I got to cut y'all off because I'll be taking orders next week if I don't stop. So we are taking orders for turkey dinners. We have our famous mac and cheese, our cornbread dressing, our greens, our green beans, our candy potatoes, our mashed potatoes. We have mozzarella, Alfredo. We have everything that you need that you want to have for Thanksgiving, as well as also our famous desserts, our peach cobbler, our caramel cake, our red velvet cake, which is a hot item this this season, as well as also our banana pudding, which we're getting for reference. So I
thank
want
you.
Everyone to call us today. Call us at 708-526-4546. That's 708-526-4546. I'm out shopping now, getting all the supplies. So hit me up. If I don't answer, leave us a message. 708-526-4546. Thank you, Santita.
You know, shame on poor Nina, Senator Turner. You're missing some great vittles here in Chicago. I'm sorry about that, because, girl, I'm going to have. And she's going to make me fabulous meal. And I want you to know she cooks the way Grandmama used to cook. My grandmothers didn't cook. My great-grandmother did, though. Is that interesting? Neither of my grandmothers were, you know. I didn't have those.
Can I just add a little bit to that, too, because I got something from her. I told her I would save it until Thanksgiving. I opened it on Saturday just to take a little piece. And it's done. So her food,
she brought me, that was my birthday meal. And oh my gosh, I just finished the last of the pork chops about a month ago because I froze them immediately. Just delicious. I mean, really, delicious, everybody. I promise you, it's not just me. But Senator Turner, when you hear about these stories, I mean, and we have got this tremendous panel on with us today to talk. I mean, we have Hilario Dominguez by way of Johns Hopkins, of course, he and, you know, Dr. Deborah Verholden. Johns Hopkins, but he is a teacher, a Chicago public school teacher, and he's also with the teachers union, and he's making a plea for our children, as is attorney Aaron Connolly, who has a son in the public school system, as is Dr. Marnie Reeves, who teaches in the New York public school system. We have got I don't want to miss anyone, but Dr. Deborah Verholden, Aaron Connolly, Mr. Dominguez, and I don't even know where we begin. I mean, I know we were talking about, we'll get to this child who was treated horribly, who was dragged through the school. But now we've got these kids. Nina, how can we reopen? This is so uneven. The biggest public school system in the country is saying we can't open. We've got to close down again because the virus is spreading. The United States is a hot spot. We are really, the virus is spreading like wildfire in the Midwest, in Chicago, and we're talking about project. We're not even talking about vaccines or therapeutics. We're talking about when we're going to reopen these schools. Does that make sense to you?
Insanity, Sister SJ, just total insanity. And I think that Chicago is going to have to retract the opening by February. I really do. I think they're going to come and announce they're not opening after all, because it absolutely makes no sense, given the information that we have right now, that school system in particular, but that goes for almost every single school system, that you would, in the face of what you know at this moment, still insist that you're going to open up in February. Now, unless they know some stuff that we don't know, they need to get to telling people what the good news is. Otherwise, I got a feeling they're going to retract that. And the resources do need to go. I was coming in on the tail end of one of your guests talking about how monies can be invested. We need to invest money right now to make sure that our children in this country have the adequate tools that they need to be able to learn, to engage in robust distance learning as much as we can. We know it is hard because this is a change for so many people, except for college students, as you all know. Colleges and universities have been implementing online learning for quite some time. So this is really truly a new thing for our K-12 system. But where there is a will, God knows there is a way. So we need to make the investment so that parents have what they need and communities have what they need to help our children learn online. I know that the Boys and Girls Club, I don't know if they're doing it across the country, but at least in some areas are trying to take up the slack. So we need more organizations like that that can help our parents. We need a communal effort, and the community is large on this. It is all levers of government, and it's everybody in the community can be a part of making sure that our children have the best learning experience that they can have under these circumstances.
Well, let me ask you this, because we're now moving into what we hope will be a new administration. That's not been settled yet. That's officially settled, everybody. You know I'm a stickler for the finer points. After the Electoral College confirms this, that's why we almost had that smash up the night before last in Michigan, because this is not over yet. Everybody. I keep making you an attorney, but, you know, you deal with the law. But Senator Turner, help me with this. Do you think now is the time to press for something as simple as Wi-Fi being a public utility? Just open it up. Because many of our children, we know there's a digital divide in this country. And many of our children, and I'd like for Mr. Dominguez and Dr. Reeves and everybody to weigh in on this. And Dr. Verholden, it's something as basic. Senator Turner, people don't have access to the internet. How are these children going to do their schoolwork when they don't have access to the internet?
That's exactly right, Sister SJ. Yes, we should make it a public utility. I can tell you from traveling all over this country that there were spots, particularly in the South, that I entered via car and at points did not have bars on my phone.
Yeah,
my team and I just told me if anything had happened. And that's just us just driving through, you know, because I have the privilege of living in an area that has internet where you don't even question whether or not you're going to have it. So absolutely, we need to make that a public utility. There are children right now today that go to the McDonald's or the Starbucks or something in their neighborhood so that they can get internet access. It is unconscionable, yes, in the 21st century. Internet is a necessity. It is not a luxury. And we must make sure that all of our children have access. The digital divide is real. It is black. It is white. It is brown. It is rural, primarily. And we got to do something about it.
What should we be doing right now as we're going into, and Mr. Dominguez, I'm going to bring all of you back in, but, you know, because she's a national co-chair of the Sanders for President campaign, I mean, you understand, you've also been a state senator. Legislatively, I mean, and you're still someone who is an organizer and an activist. What should we be pushing for right now? I mean, like right now, because I see Vice President Biden having these virtual town halls with various people, and I think that's very important. But I think we need to have something like this on education and on something as, you know, let's not take it all the way out there, Nina. Let's start right here on the basics.
Yeah.
Open up Wi-Fi.
That's right.
Give everybody, connect everybody. A computer for every child. How about, you know, chicken in every pot from the 30s and 40s?
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
A computer for every child. How about that?
How about that? It's as simple as that. We have the resources to be able to do it. And when you want to talk about real public-private partnerships, Silicon Valley, come on through. I mean, there are people who can marshal the resources to make this happen, and it won't take a whole lot. In terms of the what the government can do, absolutely, in terms of making sure that the rules are pushed, not just legislation, but this administration should do what it can do from an administrative standpoint to ensure that we move closer to ensuring that the internet is a public utility. On the state level, state governments can do something about this as well. When these utility companies want to use the public right away, see, they're using the public right away for their equipment. And so why shouldn't they have to pay into the public pot to ensure access to the internet and also that children have what they need to learn? So there's something for all levels of government to do right away. And if this administration makes it a priority, it can happen very quickly. It doesn't have to take a long time to get this done. This has been a need for a very long time. It didn't just start at this moment. But again, COVID is just peeling back the layers for us as a nation and as a world about all the fissures, all of the unfinished business, all of the types of people that we have allowed to languish in this country. COVID is really revealing our sins. Hello, somebody.
Mm. That's the podcast, everybody. You need to get it. Go to NinaTurner.com and just get the Hello Somebody's podcast. You don't want to miss it. It is fabulous. Let me bring in Mr. Dominguez and the whole panel. Start, because Mr. Dominguez, I hear you are about to jump through the lines and give her a big hug and a kiss. I can hear that. I heard it. Man. I felt you.
Senator Turner, it's good to see you again. Last time we saw you, you came with Senator Sanders to the Union Hall. So it's good to speak to you again. And I appreciate you giving us a larger picture. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate you giving us a larger picture, because here in Chicago, we're looking at something similar with equity. Right? We have in CPS, we have our leaders throwing out terms like we need to be equitable. Right? But where's the equity when it comes to the black and brown clerks that are needlessly being forced to go back and work? Where's the equity when we're talking about the West Side and the South Side, right? And the fact that there's barely any librarians there or nurses, right? Or the underfunding for our predominantly black schools. You know, they're trying to shut down a school right now on the South Side. So we're not
another
talking
one.
About equity, right? We're not talking about equity when it comes to our South and West Sides, our black and brown neighborhoods. Right, but instead, what they're coming out with are these phony structures and skeletons of timelines to get us back into the school building. And I want to clarify, because I know we keep saying that schools said that they're returning in February. As a special education teacher, they told us that we're returning on the 4th of January for pre-K.
Wait a minute, what?
Cluster programs.
Wow.
Yeah, for pre-K and cluster programs, staff returns the 4th of January, and then they want the students for pre-K and cluster programs to return the 11th of January.
Return so
they're
what?
Talking about.
No. Back this up. Return where? Return to what? What conditions are you returning to? I mean, no, help me with this. Because, I mean, we've been talking with Dr. Reeves throughout the year. She's been going in. She's got pre-existing conditions, but she's going into these buildings with her measuring tape. And she is saying to me, calling back, she says, we are not ready. They have not spaced out the desks. We don't have the dividers. We're not ready. I mean, it's not just the teachers who are at risk. It's the students. It's the janitors. The janitors have to do more than clean. Now they need to sanitize. When you're in a hotel now, everybody, when you're in a hotel now, you can't, they don't book hotel rooms on consecutive nights unless you're staying there. Once you leave the hotels now, leave the room open for like 3 days. Because they have to not only be cleaned, they must be sanitized. Then they can rebook that room.
Yeah.
I mean,
what the district has said is, hey, we hired this company, and they put in these high-tech filters, so we should be good to go. So basically, they're like, if they give you a broken-down car, they told you they switched out the air conditioning, and you're good to go in the car. Right, they're getting on the news every day and saying that the house is burning, COVID is rampant right now in our city, and then they're telling us this is when you're going to go back in. That's the problem, right? At this point, it's beyond frustrating. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Deborah Verholden, how is this sounding to you?
It's all making good sense. It just all makes good sense. I feel like we're preaching to the choir, though. We got a nice little melody going. The question is, how do we impact those who are making the decision? Mm. Right? Like I said, I'm a very trusted and credible messenger in my community. We need to be looking at how do we elevate the voices of trusted and credible messengers so that we're able to move forward, get resources to do the things that we actually need to do, and not fall into the trap and the snares of some of the power tricks that are happening, where really we're seeing the most vulnerable and marginalized among us are just being placed in harm's way. Most of it honestly disgusts me. It really does. And I'm looking at even the gaps in public health and some of our leaders and the fact that, man, they're trained. The CDC is filled with experts. Nothing happened when coronavirus hit. They didn't get dumber. They didn't lose all that good training. They've been muzzled. Their messages have been muddled. And that's what's happening. We're being driven by profit and in politics and not by the protection and the betterment of all of our people. And I think that's the thing we need to be fighting against. We have an opportunity to emerge out of this kind of systemic change that will make us better and stronger. And that's what we all need to be fighting for and standing for.
Hey, stay right here. Hello, somebody.
Amen.
The Nina Turner
Amen.
Podcast. Oh, no. I want you to weigh in on this. And, you know, I want to hear from Dr. Reeves and Attorney Connolly. Because I want to know, is there anyone that could be sued? I mean, what can we do? I mean, because a lot of parents don't feel like they have any power. And the parents have power. Together, we have power. We need to know how to use our power. We need to know what we need to be demanding for our children and for all the people who work in the school system. More of the Santita Jackson Show, Save the Children, in just a few minutes.
This is the Santita Jackson
Absolutely.
Show.
But you know, everybody who's having children, wow. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show. Thursday, November 19th, 2020. We're just a week away from Thanksgiving, everybody, coming into the holiday season, which is a month away from Christmas. Wow, wow, wow. And we are in the midst of a pandemic, the likes of which we have not seen at least in 100 years. And what about our children? We've been talking with this tremendous panel led by, of course, the great State Senator Nina Turner. Hello, somebody. You got to get this podcast. It's the fastest growing podcast in the country. And I'm so glad because it's just a fabulous podcast. And you get a chance to hear her and her guests unfiltered as she would demand. And we love that about Dr. Nina Turner, Dr. Deborah Verholden, unfiltered, as always, Associate Dean of Public Health at Michigan State University. We just love her. We love her. Everyone thinks you're a preacher now, Dr. Deb. I just want you to know that. I'm about to make you a reverend. Mm-hmm. I can't do that. But Attorney Aaron Connolly, we haven't heard from you, and Mr. Hilario Dominguez, who is a teacher. And of course, he and I think that you all, it's a conspiracy. You all, these Johns Hopkins radicals got on my show this morning. So I don't know what's up. But let me hear from you just very quickly, Attorney. It's Senator Turner again. What can we do at this time when we are about to get a new administration? Okay. One that we're going to have to push, and I think we'd have to push any administration. I don't care how far to the left or to the right they are. We should never lose our voices. We should never be silenced or be silenced during any administration,
True.
Whether you voted for them
True.
Or not. You got to get out, and now you've got to advocate. Now is the time to advocate for Wi-Fi as a public utility. Now is the time for, look, executive action, Medicare for all. Why do I say Medicare for all? Because you know what? Even with ACA, as significant a step as that has been, you can get tested for COVID-19 for free, but you can't get treated for free. And people are going broke. Because they cannot afford to be treated for COVID-19. and the lingering health issues from COVID-19. So what should we, I'm going to go around and ask everybody here, what should we be pushing for right now, Senator Turner? Because it seems to me now is the time for us to be acting.
Yes. Yeah, well, you know, you could just call the question. The question is very simple. Whose side are you on? That's it, and that's all. Just that simple. Whose side are you on, and then act accordingly? That's it.
Mm. Okay. Well, that's simple. I think I hear a whole lot of amens. Let me go with you, Attorney Connolly. What are you saying?
Well, I first think there's a lot that can be done by executive order, but I want to make sure that we are building a process that will ensure Medicare for all for long term, right? Mm-hmm. We don't want to undermine the importance of this. And I'm speaking as someone who is a big supporter of Medicare for all, who really, really needs it for personal reasons and sees the impact on the entire country because of the pre-existing conditions I've been dealing with for years. So I would love that. I want to make sure that we have our ducks in a row to ensure that initiative is not struck down. But in the meantime, there's things that we can do by executive order that take some of the most stressful pieces of our medical system off the backs of the people and puts it where it should be, which is the insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies that are making billions of dollars off of us being sick. And I would like to see some concrete, specific changes by executive order for things on medication, right? Making life-saving cost-benefit analysis prove preventative care measures free or cheaper for folks, right? Looking at the biggest bills that folks have and taking some of those pressures off in smaller ways.
Sure.
If we think that it can be sustainable by executive order, I'm all for it. I also think we need immediate protections for folks that are in the DACA program. We see that being battled out in the courts. This is, you know, people's lives are at stake here. And I have friends that are on this program, and it's very stressful time. I would love to see that on the agenda for President Biden as soon as he enters office. So those are my top two.
Well, let me ask you that. Moving on to you, Mr. Dominguez, do you think that maybe we need to have a children's bill of rights? You know, that's one of the genius of Marion Wright Edelman and the Children's Defense Fund. The fact that she would create a foundation because she said the youngest among us, she said, you know what? Maybe you don't want to look at their parents, but the children need defending. I mean, let's save the children. Let's have a children's defense fund, because you know what? It's hard. You know, no actor wants to share a scene with a child. They're scene stealers and they're heart stealers, you know. So help me with this, Mr. Dominguez, because you are sitting with our children, and you're with the children who arguably need the most. The children with the special needs, the child who needs that extra bit of attention, who needs something very, very specialized, and each one of them needs something different, right?
That's right. Yeah,
so,
I teach special education in the South Side.
God bless you.
I'm getting ready to start school soon, so this will be one of the last things I have to share with you all today.
Well, you have the floor. You have the floor.
And I think it's important to say that my students would say, they want to speak for themselves, right? And that children should have a voice every time. And when we make, you know, when we have a district that's making decisions about somebody else's children in back rooms, that is just not, that's not equitable, and that's not right, right? And I almost started chanting when Senator Turner was saying, "Which side are you on?" Because which side are you on, my people? Which side are you on? We always have to be on the children's side. And we cannot risk putting their lives at risk by sending us back to school. I know remote learning is hard. As a teacher, this is not what I signed up for. It's certainly not what parents signed up for. Certainly not what our students signed up for. But we have to figure out how we can make this better, how we can provide a more robust education system, right? And it not only starts by thinking about how to improve the classroom, but we have to talk about how we improve our lives outside, right? We need renters to have safety right now, to not be evicted from their homes. We need our undocumented folks to feel safe in the streets that they live in and the cities that they help build, right? We need our working class families to get help, and not our corporations and our wealthy to get all these tax breaks that they're getting, right? So when we're talking about increasing property taxes for our working class and poor folk, we're not thinking equity. And so I just want to say one last thing that I want to thank our parents. I want to thank our students, because without you, none of this would be possible. And I just want to ask you to keep fighting, you know, to keep fighting the good fight, and also to not let, you know, taking a play from our kids. They're really into this game called Among Us right now. Mm-hmm. Know who the imposter is. There's an imposter among us, right? And it's not you all, it's not the teachers, it's not the kids. It's our leadership that aren't putting our lives first. So thank you a lot, Shantita. I appreciate you having me on air and allowing me to share a little bit about what the experience is like in the classroom.
Oh, no. You have a home here, and I want to thank you for your service. Thank you for all that you do for our children. They need you, and we need you. And the next time that you think that you even hear that a teacher wants to go on strike, now you understand why they need to make as much money as possible. If you can pay a banker, we can pay a teacher. That's how I feel about that. We're going to have to grow up, because now that you've been left at home with your children, little John, little Quan, little Jawan, little Sally, Sally May, et cetera, who would never, oh, no, they would never do. Now you understand what they do, and you understand what Mr. Dominguez and Dr. Reeves have to deal with every day. That's what's important. And that's, you know, that to me, Dr. Verholden, and that has been one of the gifts, Nina, of this moment. Aaron. Ilario.
I've been home with a 7-year-old for a long time. I think it was 4 months. I'm a single mom. Had spent, I think, literally 4 months, just him and I, because we're immune compromised. I have type 1 diabetes. We couldn't leave the house. We didn't go to the grocery mm-hmm. store. We relied on friends to pick up my medication because the postal service wasn't working. And so as a parent, I have seen the frustrations and the challenges, but also I think I have a little bit of a different perspective than some of the parents. Mm-hmm. Luckily, I'm able to work from home, and it has been very frustrating. I've, you know, taken on less work than I normally would, and have been able to structure my time differently. I have my mom helping us remotely, who is a special ed teacher as well, because we have some attention issues, ADD, and my son is also getting tested for dyslexia, which I have as well. So I understand those challenges and the frustrations of the parents, but at the same time, we are both potentially immune compromised and understand mm-hmm. that it's not just about us, right? It's about these amazing teachers and educators that are trying their best and trying to find these new things. They should be empowered and not, I mean, the teachers, for example, Santita, got the same email the parents did that with no notice. Mm-hmm. that Chicago Public Schools were going back in February. And I was shocked and upset because, of course, I want him to go back and make friends and participate and socialize. And he gets so much energy from that. But also, there was no lead up to this, that this was happening. And it felt we have to opt in or opt out very soon. And when I was speaking with his teacher at parent-teacher conferences, found out that they received the same notification. They didn't have prior notification either. So it seems like there's a better way to do this. Empower parents. Yeah, it's very frustrating.
I'm frustrated. I'm not a parent. I don't have a child in the system, but this is like frustrating. I mean, and Dr. Deborah Verholden and Nina, come on. This is ridiculous. The teachers and the parents get the same notification at the same time? Deborah, that's insane. I mean, and you're telling me you're supposed to send your child. There's no one more precious in the world to you than your child. You're supposed to send them into a building. You don't know if it's been sanitized. You know, children are part of the, at least when I was in school 1,000 years ago, part of your, you were graded on academics and your behavior. Because that was something the teacher had to work with, too. These children, what did you say? They start off with the surgical mask, and they come home with the Batman mask on. I mean, because that's what kids do. So, hello, somebody. Nina, help me. Help me. Help me.
No, it shows a lot.
I just feel like there's nothing that no one's talking about.
The letters and the teachers never get it. Parents get letters and the teachers don't get a letter for 2 weeks.
It's all horrible.
Oh, you're going to be back
Marnie,
in school.
Marnie, it's all horrible. There is no, but that's why I went back to a constitutional amendment to guarantee every child equal access to an equal high quality education. Because when you do that, you have they become a budgetary priority. That's what it comes down to. And you are governed accordingly. You know, the last department before the Department of Homeland Security that was created in the late 70s, as President Carter was on his way out of office, was the Department of Education. Dr. Mary Frances Berry, he tasked her with pulling it together. Now, he didn't ask her to be the first secretary, but he asked her to create it, and that's what she did do. Education is not. I'm saying education is not even a priority in this country. It's just not for.
It is
for the masses of children. It's a priority for the elite children, because I can tell you, I know some kids who are in these elite high schools and grammar schools, and when they had to go to remote learning, the transition was almost seamless. It was almost seamless for kids whose parents were of means or that.
So I think, Santita, one of the things that a lot of people felt, a lot of parents might have felt, is that the teachers were preventing their kids from becoming their best in a lot of cases. They didn't realize the system was preventing the teachers from providing adequate education to the kids. So I think now what a lot of parents have seen, especially with the distribution of devices, the fact that they're not providing Wi-Fi, which is so ridiculous to me that, you know, you cannot even give the children who you claim you want to be educated, who you claim are the future of this country, you have not made provisions for them to get free Wi-Fi. But as soon as a budget is put in the House or the Senate, anything that has to do with war is covered. So we want our children to fight wars, but we don't want to educate them, right? And that's an issue. That's a very big issue. And as someone who has studied the inequities in education from the beginning of the system, you know, I constantly go back to the progressive era, where we've been taught the same things we're talking about today is the same things that have been talked about for centuries. And there's realistically been no real change, because for every step forward that has been taken, there have been at least 100 steps backward. You know, we have
absolutely a
budget system that has not provided for the safety of the kids. Like for me, as a parent, during this pandemic, I don't want my child on a bus, especially a bus that's not air conditioned, especially a bus that doesn't have an HVAC system.
And let me say this. Education was at the center of then Senator Biden's career. Okay? We need to be having those discussions right now.
Absolutely.
It was about education equity. And he didn't sign up on, and he was not on the right side of history on that, by the way. He was not. But this is an opportunity for him to get on the right side of history. We've got to completely rethink education, and not Bill Gates' version of it. Because I don't know what it is.
Education right now and closing of schools and parents.
No,
news right but now.
We've already established we don't want to educate kids. We want to train them, because we want to put them in the big box stores. And there's nothing wrong with working there. But if you want to do something else, you really won't have the opportunity, because educated people are hard to manage. Trained people, you give them entertainment, you give them something to eat, you give them a job, and they come home and they go back and forth. That's all. But educated people change societies. Educated people broaden societies. Educated people we don't want. That is clear. Now, maybe that's what the establishment doesn't want, but the people need to demand something else. I mean, today, right now. Because we have generations on the line. Generations on the line. And this is absolutely unfair. My pastor, Reverend Clay Evans, said, I've never seen God make a mouth he could not feed. I've never seen God have a vision without making provision. We are, each one of us, we are the manifestation of a vision of God. And provisions are on this earth for each and every one of us. And we need to demand our access to these provisions. Life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, food, real good food, solid, good, fair housing, the vote, all of that. We're going to have to grow up and demand that. No one's going to give it to you, Nina. I mean, come on. Yeah. What are we doing here?
True.
I mean, Wi-Fi? You've got kids going, sitting outside of schools now in the winter because they want to do their homework. And the one child that I saw in the Daily Mail doing that, he was a little white child. This is happening to everybody. Because white people aren't doing well either in America today. So come on, everybody. Okay, what'd you say? Hello, somebody? How about that? Whether they know it or not? Hello, somebody. So what are we going to do now, Nina? What are we going to do? What are we going to do?
We gotta fight. I mean, as you were saying, nobody can. In a representative democracy, we gotta be on and popping, and everybody has a role to play. Everybody needs to determine that role and get to work. And we have to make a demand. As you know, sis, I say it over and over, and I'm going to continue to say it. We cannot fall so in love with politicians. Folks can't be having a sigh of relief because, oh my God, President Donald Trump is out of office. Okay. So what does that mean next? What does that mean in terms of lifting people? What does that mean in terms of changing people's material conditions? That's what I want to know. Now that that is checked off the list, what is this administration going to do, and what will all the other folks who put so much energy into this? We put so much energy into talking about this man. He in our head. Trump is in our head. And even when he's out of office, he's still going to be in our head. So we have to take some of that energy, because neo-fascism had to be defeated. Don't get me wrong. But now I want to know, what are you going to do? Whose side are you on? And act accordingly. And don't make excuses. We've been talking about Medicare for all for decades. This ain't the first time we had this conversation. The original iteration of Medicare for all, of Medicare as it exists now, was supposed to be Medicare for all before bad politics got in the way. So it's time for good politics to get in the way, and don't abdicate our responsibility to make demands across the board and hold these people accountable. I don't want to hear excuses from people who lead the free world about what they cannot do. No, get it done. It can be done. Where there's a will, there is a way. So we sometimes, Sister SJ, we feel more sorry for the people with the most power than we do for the powerless. Oh, let it take time. Oh, they just got there. Every excuse in the book. They just won. No, the time is right now. We ain't got another second to waste.
That's why I put you there.
That's how I feel.
I'm with you. Mic drop on that. That's why I put you there. I didn't put you there to take pictures.
Come on.
I didn't do that. I mean, people out here starving, Dr. Deborah Verholden. That's why you left the comfort of Johns Hopkins. And you went to Flint, Michigan. Flint. Because you said they need me there. They need an advocate. And that is exactly what you've been. Where do we go from here, Dr. Deborah Verholden? I mean,
we need advocates though everywhere, and we need well-trained, well-credentialed advocates. And it's so funny because I don't know how you teach bold. I don't know how you teach courage and all of those things. What I do know is that with each successive opportunity that one has to step forward, you grow those things, right? It's like practice, you know? I was a hurdler in high school, and I'm 5'3". So really our team was just shorthanded, right? So there was a real, and I don't look like a track runner either. I'm not built like a track runner, but I was a shot putter. And they said, well, we're short on the hurdling side. And so I ended up doing a 4x4 and hurdle, not my event. But what happened is with each successive practice, with each successive event, I got better and better and ended up placing third in the state as a hurdler, a little 5 foot three girl with big, thick legs and strong arms, and placed number one in shot put. I was the number one shot putter in the state of Maryland and ended up being the number three hurdler because I practiced. We have an unending opportunity right now among us for people to practice being bold, for people to practice being courageous, for them to step out on the skinny branches, bring their expertise to bear, bring their voice forward. I can't guarantee people that it's going to make the difference, but if we don't even try, you'll never know. In the same way we got this choir and this nice melody being performed and call coming together on this call, what will it really take for us to weave a national, and now we understand, global network of people in the choir who know that they're supported and who get these unending opportunities and seize them to practice being bold and being courageous. This is what we've seen with some of our leaders of these leading health agencies. They've allowed themselves to be bullied. They've been bullied into silence. They've been bullied into complacency. They've been bullied out of their good, solid training and forthrightness and helping to empower our people. So the call to action is for everyone. And I just encourage people, wherever you are, take one step. If you're not comfortable going on the radio, if you're not comfortable hosting a community webinar, at least be willing to reach out to your school superintendents, to your elected officials. These people all owe us. They raised their hand for a specific job. It's their job to be informed by the science and by the experts. So I just encourage people, wherever you are, take one bold action today. If for you it's an email, send that email. If it's for you joining a rally, fine. An easy way to get engaged is to join an organization. We have all of these activist-oriented organizations that are doing work. If you ain't a solo singer, just join the choir.
How about
join
that?
Choir. Pay your dues.
How about that?
Join Rainbow Push Coalition. And if you need some motivation, I encourage you to go on Amazon and purchase I Am Somebody. I got 5 copies. I have 2 in my household. 2 in my household. And when I tell you, when I read it, it's like a mantra now. Like, I am somebody. What I have to say matters. I have a contribution to make on this planet, and I won't be silenced, and I won't be muzzled, and I won't have my message muddled. So I'm encouraging everybody.
Amen to that.
One bold action today. Just one.
Stay right there, everybody. You know what? Juan and Robert and Carrie, if you would, please hold on because I want to talk with you. Whew, you know, just everything's just so hot here. But, you know, really, you got to get involved. And you have to know that you are somebody. You count. You matter. You matter, everybody. You are somebody. I'm Santita Jackson. Can't wait to be with you tomorrow. I'm going to have Ro Khanna with us. Talk to you tomorrow. God bless you, everybody.